You're tuned to Tidings, and I'm Hazel Kahn. I'm talking again to a very old friend. I don't mean he's very old, but our friendship is old. Our common factors are very old. We went to the same boarding school, but we went at different times. His name is Tom Scovel, and he's talking to me on Skype from California. This is a second conversation. The first we had, I think it was maybe 3 years ago, Tom? I think your book had just come out. Was that possible? Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah, and we chatted about China at that time.
Yeah, so I said we've got to talk and find out of the intervening years. And because Tom, just a very quick background, Tom went to the same school, which is Woodstock School, in Mussoorie, India. But he was there after I left, and I was there before he came. But he grew up in China. I grew up in India and Pakistan. And so when we met at a small reunion at a friend's house, we just had a lot to talk about. And I thought maybe our listeners would also be interested in hearing our conversation. And when we replayed the broadcast of your interview, Tom, two people said to me, "That is really interesting." And I said, "I think so." I was listening to it again too, and I thought, "Yeah, it really is interesting. We should continue the conversation." So what you're listening to now is that continuation. Tom, you were talking about going to India again to see the school. Then it turns out you actually did that. So I would like to just have you talk about that.
Yes, we both went to this boarding school, an English-speaking boarding school up in the beautiful foothills of the Himalayas in northern India. I was there for my last 3 years of high school. Mm-hmm. I always wanted to return to that school. Last year, my grandson, who lives with me, had a chance to go work in an orphanage in southern India last summer. Mm-hmm. So I immediately seized the opportunity to use that as a return trip to Woodstock High School. I flew over and he joined me, and we flew up north from southern India to the site of the school. My return to China definitely was a roots trip because that's where I was born and all my formative years were laid in China. But those 3 years in India as an adolescent had a profound impact on me. So in a sense, I have roots there too. And so 62 years later, I returned to the school. We were there for a full week, and I had contacted the school ahead of time, told them that I would be most eager to meet with the students, and they had me booked every day. I gave a couple of public talks and just had a wonderful time interacting with the teachers and students. It truly was like Rip Van Winkle suddenly showing up, waking up, and not realizing what had happened for 62 years. That's how it felt. And, that, you know, they were just amazed that I remembered the school, and the teachers were wonderful, too. I think it was a mutually heartwarming experience.
I need to rewind now. You just cavalierly, you said, and I flew in. I mean, that doesn't fit at all with my memories. We didn't even have cars, leave alone planes. You know, we were on roads with shoelaces.
And trains.
And
to get to Woodstock, my parents were stationed in the Punjab. And so we would take an all-night train and then switch to a smaller gauge train that took us to Dehradun, which was the large city at the foot of the huge mountain range. And then from there, we took a one-hour bus ride up 22 hairpin curves. And then from there, we had to walk a good 5 kilometers, about 3 miles to school. No cars, no vehicles went to the school. It's all by foot. But they just had horses to carry stuff, you know. So now fast forward to last year, 2018, we flew to Dehradun and then in a nice car, air-conditioned car, whisked us up the mountain to Woodstock. As I recall, the bus ride took about an hour. The ride up last year and the car ride down were 2.5 hours. the big change, the road used to be just mainly through the jungle, you know, zigzagging upwards through the jungle. Very little habitation, almost nothing on the road except buses going up and down and occasional mule pack or something. Now, and this is because India is so much more crowded now and the population has increased so much, almost every corner of the road has a little shop where they're selling tea or trinkets or something. They're squalid shacks all up and down the mountain, and there are cars coming down, cars going up, motorcycles all over the place, cows and dogs all over the road. So instead of a one-hour bus ride sort of through the jungle, it's two hours, 2.5 hours, you know, trying to get through this traffic. Dehradun is now a huge city. All along this simple two-lane road, the road is the same. It's just a two-lane road.
You say jungle. I don't know. You don't mean jungle.
At Dehradun, you're starting at around 2,000 feet, maybe, and you have to climb 5, 6,000 feet, zigzagging upward. And as soon as lush foliage, which, you know, in the monsoon turns into a jungle. So we were there during the monsoon season. But now it's all habitated. So a lot of people kept asking me, what changes do you see? And I think it's like anybody going home again, half of it is the same and half of it is completely unrecognizable.
And do you have trouble reconciling those two halves?
No, because, you know, I've traveled a lot and returned to China. Most people are interested in the contrast. I'm more interested in the similarities. Yeah, the continuity. And especially when your heart and your emotional memories are involved, you long to search out those continuities.
Yes.
So there was much that was the same. But the big difference, Hazel, and you can see it in the number of monkeys, the number of dogs, the number of cows, and most clearly by the number of people. The India that I knew in the 50s had about a third to a quarter of the people that live in India now. Therefore, there are four times as many people, four times as many cows, four times as many dogs, four times as many monkeys, four times the amount of everything. It's now one large extended suburb of Dehradun.
Suburb implies a certain standard of living. But
yeah, I don't remember it as polluted as it is now. If you go anywhere in the world, if you go to Long Island, it's the automobile and proliferation of everything. Despite that, it was a wonderful time. Like you, I got a doctorate, but of all the institutions I attended, I think I learned more in those 3 years at Woodstock, and it had a much more profound effect on my education. So two changes. Again, first of all, the number of high school students at Woodstock is four times greater than it was when I graduated. Mm-hmm. When I graduated in 56, we had a class of about 20, 22. Mm-hmm. The last year's class was 80.
Mm-hmm.
So now the majority, or at least the plurality, are Indians. Mm-hmm. Of course, there are those from Sri Lanka. Korea has a large contingent, Japanese, Chinese. So back in the 50s, the plurality were North American. But that's the second change. The demography of the school has changed from being a majority non-Indian to a majority Indian, but still very diverse.
What is also true, and I don't know if I felt this very, very keenly, is that the culture of Woodstock was American. If you weren't American, I mean, I was not, and if you weren't Christian, as I was not, one or two of the people in our class, the Indian students, some were in fact Christian, and others were Muslim or Hindu or whatever. But the prevailing culture is very strongly American I don't know, Presbyterian would it have been, or Methodist? I don't know the difference there, but...
And Protestant, I would say, yeah. There weren't too many Catholics.
What I'm wondering is that still true?
Certainly changed. The change, I think, is not so much getting away from an American scholastic culture, preparing kids to go to an American university or college. Now, there's still a very strong spiritual emphasis. It's certainly much more eclectic, much more inclusive. So Woodstock is much more similar to these other international mm-hmm. schools. Whereas 60 years ago, schools like Woodstock were an anomaly. There was one in Cairo, one in South India, North India, two in China. But now they're all over the globe.
What accounts for that increase?
There are many Korean kids studying at Woodstock, because Hyundai Automobile Company has major manufacturing centers all over India. Why are there so many Japanese students there? Because Toyota, Mitsubishi, Sanyo have companies all over India. It's globalization. 60 years ago in any country, you didn't have too many contacts with foreigners unless they were foreign students studying at your university or perhaps a few diplomats or a few missionaries in Asian countries. But now there are just tens of thousands of people working for many industries, and they take their family, and you know, they're stationed in India for maybe 10 years or something, and therefore their kids go to these schools. Going back to the similarities, there were a couple of places, and you might remember them. The buildings, they tried to maintain the basic campus. So the outside of buildings look very spiffy and painted. The inside, they're all high-tech, air-conditioned, heated in wind, you know, in the cool. Instead of, you know, freezing your buns off in the spring, you have heated dorm rooms and stuff. The small tank that was basically a large bathtub that we pretended was a swimming pool is now a beautiful 25-meter multi-lane pool for competitions. Mm-hmm. But there were two places that I swore had not changed in 62 years. One was our auditorium, which was called Parker Hall. And except for some electronic, you know, for a new sound system and lights, I gave a talk there to the whole school my last day. Inside it looked like graduation day. I can remember standing on the stage last year and looking out at Parker Hall and thinking, my God, you know, I could almost see my parents sitting there watching me proudly graduate in 56. The other spot that hadn't changed is, because I like sports, I went down to what was called Hanson Field. I had many friends there, but there were four of us, sort of the four musketeers that went hiking together and did sports together. And two of the closest friends actually were murdered here in the United States later on in life when they came to do university studies. And so I thought of them especially. It was Rennie Burgoyne was one, and Tom Manson was the other. And it was almost like survivor's guilt, because I thought of them. They were both better students than I. They were both better athletes than I. Tom was a very good musician. Brenny was a brilliant student and went on to become an ophthalmologist. And I stood there right where they had finished their races. And I thought, why aren't they here with me? Or why aren't the two of them wistfully looking back at their old friend Tom, who went hiking with them? It just goes back to what I said, this place, it was almost like hallowed ground, because it carried such strong emotional memories that had lasted for 60 years and sort of surged into my consciousness as I stood there.
You've been listening to Tom Scovill talking on Tidings on WPKN Radio.
One thing that I'd sort of forgotten, our education at Woodstock was vertical, not horizontal. In other words, we always had to hike up in the morning from our dorms up to the classrooms. And then we would, if there were sporting events or training, we would hike all the way down below our dorms. And then we'd have to hike up to the dorms again. And then after supper, if there was play practice or music practice, we would have to hike up again. So everyone at Woodstock was fit simply just because at 7,500 feet, you were hiking up and down several thousand feet a day.
And you see, sports has never even slightly been my thing. So I found all that walking around and stuff very hostile to me. I felt it inhospitable. We lived in a hall. We lived in the plains. We just never did those things. I mean, I might have adjusted physically, but I never adjusted psychologically. I just found the whole experience of being at Woodstock. Yeah, I mean, you said that those 3 years were very important in your formation as a person. To me, you know, it was not, the whole thing was not very positive because I just did not belong. And you, in the end, you were American. Even though you'd lived in, were born and raised in China, this was familiar to you, being at that school, in one way or another. The underlying culture was familiar to you. Yeah. It wasn't to me at all. I aspired to it. I mean, that was part of my way of adjusting. Adapting was to aspire to being American. And of course, I never was. But I mean, I had to do that. I had to try and be like them. But I still want to go back to China in a way. I just wondered how much you felt that you were different.
Let me just go back to what you just said, Hazel. I have complete empathy for that reaction to Woodstock.
Do you?
Because I have several friends, including the only girlfriend I ever had in high school, who lives, you know, in Oregon, and we see each other about once a year. She grew up an American missionary kid at Woodstock, and like I mentioned, the four of us, mm-hmm. close friends, the one surviving friend is like you and like her, my former girlfriend. They couldn't get out of Woodstock fast enough. They rejected the sort of conservative Christian mm-hmm. ethos that, you know, permeated the school. You know, we had to go to chapel, for example, and had to go to church and stuff. They longed to be raised as Americans and drive a car when they're mm-hmm. 16 and go to school dances. I think we had square dances at Woodstock, but God forbid that we would ever have ballroom dancing there, you know, that a boy and girl could touch each other so closely. So I have complete empathy for my experiences. I would guess rather atypical in that it had a profoundly and generally positive impact
on me. Was
it
because you were older when you came? I mean, you were a teenager already when you...
Yeah, maybe if I were... from Jewish parents and grew up in Pakistan, I would have had very different reactions.
I just didn't like the place itself, you know. I mean, I'll tell you something. Since that experience, I kind of just don't like being in mountains. I don't like being near mountains. It's to me, they're very forbidding, foreboding kind of places, you know. And we were in the mountains. I mean, God knows, we were in the mountains.
Yeah, we were in the mountains. And as I said, it was a vertical education. Yeah, and I gloried in that stuff. Mm-hmm. So chacun a son goût, as they say in France.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we've talked about this before. You had very clear memories, right? Visual memories, of each of the buildings, of the dorms, of the hall, Parker Hall, and all of those things. Yeah, because I don't think I have a lot of memories of anything. I think if I went there, I wouldn't be able to find my way around. I wouldn't know. I mean, I have photographs, right? So photographs contain the memories, and then they become the memories, actually.
Exactly. Good point. Yeah.
So I don't know. You know, I mean, when I went back to Lahore, which was after 40 years, people would say to me, well, has it changed? And my thing is, no, it hasn't changed, because I could still see the Lahore that I grew up in laid over whatever it was now. I could do that. I don't think I could do that with Woodstock.
When you're your impression of a certain place in your life is not positive, it's natural that you don't have too many visual auditory memories of the place. And and the reverse is also true. Unlike you, I love to get out and go hiking and love the mountains and so forth. So I have many specific memories of that too, which creates a sort of a spatial or cartographic memory that helps you remember the spot, like the exact count of going down to Hanson Field and standing in the very spot where the race finished. Mm-hmm. If you look back on it, our life in Woodstock was not too different from a military life.
You see, that's why I found it so inhospitable.
Yeah, very regimented. Mm-hmm. You do this, you do that. It's Saturday morning, we do this. Everyone must march, you know, for sports day, whether you participate or not. But yeah, all these memories. We had rotten food except on Sundays when they had Indian food. Perplexed me. We were living in India. We rarely got, at least the boys, we rarely got Indian food. We got boiled British food, mostly. You know, the Raj, the leftover curse of the Raj, this terrible food. But every Sunday, after Forest Chapel, we'd run down and we would have palau, heaps of rice with cardamom and cloves and onions. And instead of
raisins.
Chapati, we had pappadum. We just gorged ourselves. We ate all our meals as boys, and the girls all ate their meals separate.
I have no memory of any of those meals at all.
Just fast forward to last year's visit. There's a large cafeteria. It's very much like if you go to any college or university, it's sort of like a food court, and you can go to the Chinese section, the Indian section, the European section, and make your own ice cream sundae. It's not as regimented, for sure. The curriculum is much more diverse now. It seems more like a small college curriculum. There are a lot of courses that are geared towards social justice issues, environmental issues, and courses on politics and economics. And one more big change that was happening just as I was there, they now have the International Baccalaureate degree. The IB degree. So that is now offered at Woodstock. But it was a great experience. And on the long flight home, you know, I just sat there in the plane thinking, you know, sort of mulling over all these things and being very grateful that I had that opportunity. But I was mentioning, I had a chance to give a talk to an assembly. Yes, it was just a short talk evoking some of the images that I shared with you in this conversation and acknowledging the impact of the school on my young life as a young man, preparing me all by myself to go to America by ship at 17. And
where were your parents?
In India, Punjab. They were missionaries and they were there for 6 years. So they kissed me goodbye and off I went. But I was well prepared. Woodstock well prepared me. I mentioned that my grandson and I had visited Taj Mahal in Agra before coming back to Woodstock, and how I thought it was the most beautiful building in the world when I lived in India, and I still do. It was wonderful. And I said, but there was a big difference, because in 1953, when my parents took me to see the Taj, when we took pictures of the Taj, our cameras faced the Taj. We held the camera to our eye and took a picture of the Taj. And I said, but amazingly, just a few weeks ago, there were all these tourists taking pictures, and they were all holding the cameras up with their back to the Taj, so that their face would be the center of the picture, and the Taj would be in the background. Mm-hmm. And then from that, I sprang to my conclusion, which is what I learned in Woodstock was a slight paraphrase of the last line of the school creed. Our school creed was, I promise to transmit Woodstock greater, better, and more beautiful than it was transmitted to me. And I said, when I left Woodstock at 17, what I learned was that I was taught to transmit the world greater, better, and more beautiful than it was transmitted to me. And that was the end of my talk.
Gosh, you know, no wonder you and I mean, I never even knew that that was part of the creed. Was it always there?
Yeah, it's always there, and it's still there, although the students don't have to memorize it or anything.
It is. It's a beautiful thing, though. It's beautiful.
It is, and I thought, again, it was, you know, the main theme of, you know, our conversation here is the impact of the school, and you can't ask for a better education if that's what at least one of the graduates leaves with, summarizing what I learned in 3 years there is, you know, leave this world a better place. And it's also, there's a bit of sadness that we live in a world now where pictures are selfies. 60 years ago, pictures were of other people and other things.
Well, now it's you in the foreground and everything else in the background. In the other ones, you never took a picture of yourself because you couldn't.
No. I'm sorry, I'm not in any of these slides of India because I took the pictures, you know. And plus Hazel, again, one of the things I learned at Woodstock is to get out and walk every day, and I'd like to go out on a walk before it gets too dark. It gets dark quickly at winter.
So you're going to go for a walk now?
Yeah, but finish up. I just... And the other thing, Hazel, is I enjoy talking to you and people like Janet Foster, my former girlfriend, Bill McKelvey, I haven't talked to him for many years, and even Ashok, who have sort of like you, the Woodstock experience definitely was not positive for them. But it's wonderful that you share a similar time of your youth or a similar place in your youth, and you share different perspectives of that. And because of that, you get a much more multidimensional understanding of that experience.
Of your experience, yeah.
Yeah, because otherwise, if you go around the world just seeing the world through your eyes, you know how impoverished you are. And I enjoy seeing Woodstock and hearing about Woodstock from different voices and seeing through different eyes. Hazel, it's getting dark, so my Woodstock legacy has to take legs.
Yeah, you'll go for your walk. Goodbye. Thank you, Tom. Thank you very much, Tom.
Yeah, and best wishes, Hazel, and stay well and delight to talk to you.
Yeah, great. Stay in touch. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
You've been listening to Tom Scovell talking about his return to his school after 62 years. Tidings is heard on the second Wednesday of every month at 7:30 p.m. All Tidings programs are archived on hazelkahn.com and produced by Tony Ernst.